Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is Talitha Williams, your faith-based community nurse, and we are in the trenches again, talking about health and wellness. And I do hope and trust that your week so far has been fine, has been healthy, you've been safe, and that things have gone well with you. And you're weathering our new changes that are happening right now. So we're going to get started. Hopefully the weather will hold up, at least for me to do 30 minutes. We're supposed to have some severe weather, so we're going to see how well we do tonight. But I wanted to continue talking about what we talked about on last week, and that is caregiving, and not only what is a caregiver, but what is the effects that that caregiving has on both the person providing the care and the person receiving the care. And as I talked about last week, caregiving has been around since the beginning of time. And we did talk about Ruth and Naomi and how that after her sons died, that after Naomi's sons died, that Ruth remained a caregiver for her mother-in-law and did what, you know, was necessary to provide for her needs. And she stayed by her side. So we know that caregiving is not a new concept. It's just how we do it now and the effects it has on us now. And it's really in a lot of other countries, they are especially in East Indian countries, they really are responsible for taking care of their elderly relatives. So it's not anything that is new. Just to refresh a little bit, we talked about you can have either formal, informal caregivers. Formal caregivers are paid. Informal caregivers are not paid. And they're usually taking care of family or friends without payment. And we talked about the fact that it does not all the time have to be elderly people, but it could be children with special needs that has some type of health issues that require round-the-clock care. And so caregiving is just one of those things that is going to be with us, and unlike most people think, most of the caregiving is not in nursing home. We talked about that was a low percentage, that most of the caring for our caregivers are for people that need care is usually done by relatives. One of the things that I have found out, and you know, I don't you know, fault people because I know everybody's needs are differently, but I do know that a lot of times, sometimes family or friends or whoever is taking care of the person really, for one reason or another, cannot do a really good job, And that's the downside to that, either because they're working outside the home, they don't have a backup plan with other people to step in when they're not there, or they just, the job has become so overwhelming to them that they just don't want to be bothered again. And they build up this type of resentment, and we know that happens. In fact, I have two cases right now where one of the ladies is taking care of her husband, and she is doing the very best that she can, but she also works outside the home. Should the husband go into a nursing home, then she would have no means of support. And so a lot of times people are depending on the spouse's support. So if they put them in a nursing home, of course, the money that they're receiving will go directly to the nursing home, and that means that the spouse will have to, you know, make other arrangements for her livelihood or his livelihood, and it just depends on, you know, if they have any kind of backup plan. And then we have another where the wife is just tired of it, and she'll leave him there by himself, you know, maybe somebody comes and checks on him, maybe not. You know, it's just a different situation. So caregiving is a difficult position, but it's one that a person has to decide, is this something that I want to do? You know, when you make up your mind that's exactly what you want to do, then it is difficult at times, but if it comes from the heart, it makes it a whole lot better despite the difficulty. A lot of times caregiving is hard because you see a lot of changes in your loved one. They may not know you anymore, or they may be too ill to talk or even follow simple requests. They may have behavior problems, yelling, biting, hitting, you know, wandering from home. And I've had patients that have done this because they did have some type of dementia. And then the biggie is that you no longer think of that person in the same way that you did before he or she became ill. And that is a very real problem. And that's why I say that caregiving has to be from the heart, because a lot of times if you're taking care of whether it's an elderly person or adult or a child, if their needs are demanding, and sometimes they don't even like the situation that they are in, and so they will lash out. Because you have some people who have been independent in their life, and they have been able to do for themselves, and the transition can sometimes be hard for them. So it's very normal for them to even to have different feelings about what's going on. And it's normal for caregivers to have feelings. You know, sometimes you wonder, am I doing the right thing? Sometimes you may get scared or lonely, or you may feel unappreciated, because a lot of times some of these people are not able to express how well they appreciate the time that you're taking out to help them. And sometimes caregivers feel resentful, and those feelings are normal. But the thing of it is, you have to do caregiving
from the heart. You have to take care of people because that's somebody you care about. And whatever the sacrifice is, it's something that you're willing to make. And to know that even though they're not able to express, you know, their gratitude, that somewhere within them they are grateful about that somebody that cares about them is willing to take care of them. And, you know, we talked about last week, we touched on the fact that caregivers put their own health at risk. And I know this from a personal experience when my sister was she was primary caregiver for my mom. And I'd always tell her, you know, I can come up there and give you a break and everything. Some every now and then she'd do that when I went up there, but, you know, she felt that it was her responsibility. And she let a lot of things regarding her health go. Not only that, you know, you feel stressed out and overwhelmed. And so because you spend so much time caring for, you know, the person that you're taking care of, that you neglect your own health. And especially if you're working outside of the home. And you have to look at the fact that some of the tasks that you have to perform as a caregiver can put extra strain on your body. Let's say you have to help lifting or bathing, you know, it can actually stress the physical body. And that's why a lot of times when people call me and they let me know, we try to find anything that will ease the physical requirements while they're taking care of their loved one. And I know one of the big ones is a lot of times if they have to do a lot of lifting, we'll get a trapeze bar, which enables them to lift them, or a Hoya lift, which they can, if the person can help lift, the trapeze bar works well. But if they're not able, then you do a Hoya lift, and you can just actually, while the patient is in, the person's in bed, is actually caught, put the padding underneath of them and just lift them up that way. In some cases, it can be a financial strain. If you have a copay, you may decide, well, I'm going to skip this because, you know, I've got to do this for my loved one. I've got to do that for my loved one. We were really, really fortunate in that. Even though my mom had income coming in and she had money, I made sure that both my kids and I, we always made sure that there was money there. And when I would go to visit, I would always leave a few $100 there for my sister, and she would not want to take it. So what I started doing is leaving it, don't tell her, and I tell you better cash that check. So, but when you have people that are able to get in there and provide not only the physical support but also some financial support, and it doesn't have to be directly to the actual person, as I told you before. Well, one of my youngest sisters did, because she wasn't able to provide the physical support, she did the shopping for all the toilet paper, the paper towels, and, you know, dishwashing liquid and washing detergent and fabric softener, things like that, paper plates, stuff like that. So it's great when you have somebody to help in that respect. And so a lot of time your caregivers, they go through it, depression, they go through anxiety, they have difficult sleeping. And so all of these are things in terms of caregiving can and affect both your emotional, mental, and your physical health. And that's why it's good, like I talked to before, like last week, is that you have some support system, that you communicate what you're feeling, you know, talk about it, because even talking about it gives you some relief. We find that a lot of caregivers have a lot of increased risk for a lot of health problems. One of the things is that they can abuse alcohol, tobacco, and drugs. And I don't mean just street drugs. I'm talking about prescription drugs. They can have anxiety and diabetes, heart disease, and high blood pressure is a biggie because they're under so much strain. And a lot of times they don't eat right. They just grab. You know, you have to look at these different things. You know, they're at risk for heart attack, heartburn. You know, they have reflux. They are high risk for infection and obesity. And because they're having to do a lot, they can have pain. They can have muscle pain. They can have joint pain. They can have headaches. That's why if you see signs that you're and you can tell that you are headed that direction, always seek help because there is help out there. If you don't have anyone immediate, if you don't have another family member or friend, there are a lot of places that have support system. You know, we talked about respite care, and respite care is available a lot of times. Especially one of the things that I tell people all the time, and they don't like to hear this, but I tell them why I'm giving them this advice. If a person has a illness in which you know that there will never be a recovery. They may be fine now, but you know they're never going to get better. They're just going to get worse. And some of those is like a lot of your dementia, Alzheimer's, you know that's not going to get better. Your COPD, your congestive heart failure, even some of your uncontrolled diabetics, people with cardiovascular disease, you know, some of those people, they are just not going to get any better. They'll get worse, but they're not getting any better. The first thing I suggest to them is to go to hospice. Nobody wants to do that because they think, well, they're not dying. That is not what hospice is for. Hospice provides more support than regular home health or other things. They bring in a whole team. They even provide respite care so that you can get out, even a weekend off or something like that. So that's why it's important to recognize that you're being overwhelmed and take care of yourself, because if you can't take care of yourself, you're not going to be do a good job with your loved ones, because if you're like stressed, you're going to lash out at little simple things that typically wouldn't bother you, but because you're already in a state of anxiety and depression and being overwhelmed, even little things, simple things like the person like, I've got to go to the bathroom, and you really get upset about something like as minor as that. It's important to take care of yourself even while you're taking care of another person. This will help prevent your stress overload or your depression. So that's why we always tell people, take care of you. You are first priority, because you have to be in a physical condition to help other people. And so a lot of times I know people, and I don't get onto them or really dwell on this, but avoiding alcohol and tobacco is one of the things that is good for you. You may think that it helps in the short term, but this can affect your sleep, and it can cause your health problems. It causes you health problems if you use them regularly. And so you know that alcohol is at the point that it's abusive, affects your liver, tobacco, affects your lungs, you know. So, you know, you've got to look at that. Also, biggie, eating healthy, balance your diet. You need the nourishment in order to provide the energy that is necessary to do the things that you do. And a lot of times I have had people that are caring for their loved ones or a friend where they'll, have you had breakfast? No, I had to do this and that, this one, and I had to do this, and I had to take care of this. And so I have to go in there, and I have to show them, look, first thing you do is you eat, okay, because that person will be there. You eat. You get you something going, and then you take care of them. And then when you fix their lunch, fix you something to eat. You know, when you fix their dinner, fix you something. You know, take care of yourself. And, of course, exercising. You know, I'm big on that exercising. And the next is a biggie. Get plenty of sleep. People think they cannot get plenty of sleep. You can. You just have to organize your day and what you have to do. And that's why I always recommend people keeping a notebook. You know when medicines, a notebook, when you have to give medicines. A notebook, if your dinner, your breakfast, lunch, and dinner time. And sometimes when you have a moment where you're not so overwhelmed, it's good to plan some meals. You can plan them, crock pot, make those crock pot meals, and freeze them. I know my oldest sister used to bring meals over to where my mom was living, and my sister would put them in meal-sized containers, and that way my mom, it was just there. She didn't have to cook. So there are days that it may be a little bit lighter than normal. Do something that you could either stick in a crock pot or maybe stick in the oven and have on hand. That's the biggie, is maximizing your time, organizing your day, and you can get plenty of sleep. And, you know, sometimes I tell people, do like you did when you had children. When they slept, you slept. Don't care what had to be done. When they took a nap, you took a nap. And so that's a good rule of thumb. If you're not able to get enough sleep during the night, because you need that rest. Your body needs that rest. Your mind needs that rest. Your soul needs that rest. And learn to manage your stress. Learn to, you know what is stressing you out. Learn to manage that. If it's like, oh, I got so much to do, I don't know. Organize. Organization can decrease your stress significantly. And by all means, visit your doctor for your regular checkup. Get your regular maintenance and preventative services done. Take the time to do that. Whatever is, you get your... because most doctors will let you get away with at least once a year, and then you can call if you need something in between. Some doctors are twice a year. But either way, if you see your doctor at least once a year, get all your preventative services, all your screenings, all your tests, all your vaccination, then you will be fine. And that's what you need to do, okay? And that helps you. And make sure that, and I told you, I think I mentioned this on last week, make sure you educate yourself on your loved one's medical condition. Understand what's going on. Understand what the long-term goals for that particular health issue is going to be. Let's say you've got somebody that has, let's say COPD, which is a lung condition. It's a combination of emphysema, asthma, you know, all those breathing issues. And maybe that person is not on oxygen right now. They're just using inhalers. They may be on a nebulizer. But understand that that particular illness can get worse. And what do you do? So educating yourself about the person you're taking care of condition can go a long ways in giving you some kind of control over what you need to do. I always tell people with congestive heart failure, COPD, Alzheimer's, and diabetes, because these, and they're not the only ones, but these have a lifelong effect on people. And the more you know about what the long-term effect can be, not what it is right now, but what it can be, the better you would be in terms of, you know, what to expect. And like I told you last week, take a break. You know, there's a limit to what you can do. And to avoid getting burned out or overwhelmed, you need to take a break. There should be, if you have a list of people that are willing to help, keep that list available, whether it's family member, friends, or temporary care workers. Reach out to these people when you need to. Maybe you just need a day to go shopping, just not have to rush back and just take your time. Reach out to those people. And remember I said a lot of people feel like it's their responsibility, and so they don't reach out to people because they feel like taking care of this person is their sole responsibility and nobody can do it like they can. And that's not true. Somebody can do it because they're only doing it for a short term. And so you just have to really reach out to people. You know, even your family doctor can give you some advice or, you know, talk to loved ones or family or look for help in your community. And this is one of the places where I think churches can be very beneficial, and that is as helping out. And I know a lot of people in different churches, that's what they do. I know we had a elderly gentleman in our church, and he's in and out of the hospital. And so some of the members went over. They would go visit him in the hospital. And when he went to the nurse home, they went to the nursing home, and they some of them went to his house and kind of helped out around there. So our support system is very, very important. And I think this is where the church can really be beneficial to different people. And it does not have to be members of your church. It's a community thing. A lady that lives across the street from our church, I didn't know she had been sick. And I know her because She worked at the hospital that I worked at when I worked there. And periodically, I would see her sitting out. And I always stop by and talk and, you know, or, you know, drive by and speak to her. And I hadn't seen her, but, you know, I just figured, you know, it was because we had a cold spurt here. And, I mean, everybody went into hibernation. Nobody was coming out because we had freezing temperatures. But I come to find out that actually she had been in the hospital. She has congestive heart failure. And she's going to have to go back because in the process of that, one of her valves is leaking. And so they're going to have to replace a valve. So I said, well, I'm just going to have to keep check on you, you know. And so she comes out of church every now and then. But she's not a member. She's just in the neighborhood. We had another lady that had thyroid surgery, and one of our young ministers was out, and he was speaking to him, and of course, he's physical therapy, and only to find out that she had thyroid surgery. So he said, you know, we need to go over there and check on her. I need you to look at her incision, make sure everything is going good. And so when I looked at it, and I told her, I said, you need to call your doctor because it's on the weekend. Let's call your doctor Monday because I think you need antibiotics. And she said they were going to give her some, and then they decided not to. And I said, no, you need antibiotics. And what I would do every Sunday, I'd go over and check on it until it healed completely. And they were very appreciative. They never came to the church. They always speak when we were going by. But that's what we do, you know. That's our job, okay? And so it's very important that we as a church body reach out to these people because they can get overwhelmed go through some depression. And so if we reach out and try to help them as much as we can, you know, we're not going to be able to do everything, but we should reach out and do as much as we can in terms of helping people when they're caring for other people. And that's why it's good, and it's not done very much nowadays. Because a lot of people, they're not in tune to their neighborhood, you know. And I don't know all my neighbors, but I know them. I don't know them personally. Now, some I know their name, but I know them from working in my yard, from, you know, they just passing by and everybody waving and hi. And so my next door neighbor, we always talk. I never had her phone number. Never did have her phone number. But we would always be in the yard talking about flowers and things because she loved flowers and I love flowers. And so there was a period of time where I didn't see her for literally months. So one of the retired school teachers down the street, and I was asking her, I said, I have not seen her. And then she began to tell me all the problems that she was having. And so she stayed in the hospital for a long time. She stayed in rehab for literally months. And then when she came home, she was not able to go outside. She was in the house. And so I thought, well, and I said, well, let me get, I got her a meat tray, and I took it over there, but nobody came to the door. And I didn't know that she couldn't come to the door. I left a note on the door. And finally, one day, it was either her daughter or her daughter-in-law came by. And I told her, look, I came over. I got her something. And I said, and I brought it over there, but I wasn't, you know, she didn't come to the door. And so I ran and got it and gave it to her. And come to find out, she can't come to her front door. Now, she was able on her walker to get to the
side door and let up her garage, but she wasn't able to get to the front door. So when I learned that, I kind of checked on her, and then several months later, I took her a fruit tray, and then I think for Thanksgiving, I got her a cake and during Easter. I got her a cake and an Easter lily, and you know, I don't know her other than being my neighbor. We just talk when we're out, and I knew she had a daughter, and I knew her son died, and she had a daughter-in-law, and she had grandchildren, and that's all I knew about her. And she knew about my kids. She knew they were military because, of course, they come over in their uniform, and she asked me about them, you know, and everything like that. So sometimes it's just, you know, just good to, you don't have to be in everybody's business, but, you know that your neighbor needs help, you know, or just something to brighten their day and things like that. So that's what I'm saying. That's such a disconnect in today's society. And I just happen to live in a neighborhood that the people still connect, you know, maybe not in visiting each other's home, but, you know, they know if something's going on, if they look out, you know, for each other, we look for in the houses and things like that. So, and saying that to say this, that, you know, reach out sometimes in your neighborhood, you know, they're a good resource. They may know people that, you know, don't mind giving you a helping hand. You know, some of my information I get is through knowing other people. And that's how I developed years ago. Now, don't have a lot of contact with that anymore, but I had a list, you know. And one of the things I did, too, is I had a patient, and I knew she needed some help. And so I knew the family needed some kind of backup. So I called one of my friends that won the home health agency, and I said, I need a copy of your sitter's list. And they gave me a copy of their sitter's list, and she told me the ones that she recommend first. But she said they're all, you know, all been checked out, but she, a few of these she knew personally. So that's why I say it's important to reach. There are a lot of resources to reach out to keep you from being so overwhelmed. Just to give you a day out, you know, to do something just for yourself. So that's going to be it for the night. I think the weather is held for now. And so just if you know somebody that is dealing with caregiver issues, just tell them to reach out. Don't close themselves off from everybody. You may not particularly want anybody to help you, but realize that you do need help, because sometimes it's the job of caregiving can be so overwhelming. And, you know, there are times that we worry more about the caregiver than we do about the person that is receiving the care. So that's one of the things, that's why I tell people, reach out. Don't be afraid to ask help. And so that's going to conclude for me for tonight. Any questions or comments? Otherwise, end it.
I got a request.
Uh-huh.
Could we have a session on male caregivers?
Sure.
There's a big disconnect between male caregivers and the female caregivers.
Yeah, and the statistics show that there's quite a few males that do caregiving.
Mm-hmm.
We just don't hear a lot about it because we typically know that females are nurturing. But there are some, I've had two male characters, and they were excellent. I would have pitted them against any female caregiver ever. I mean, when I say excellent, excellent. So I will do that because male caregivers, they're out there. They're the unsung heroes.
Yeah, and we are the ones that that are dying first.
Yeah,
because sometimes what we have to deal with, we don't know how.
Yeah, exactly.
And we don't know how or when to let go, or whether we should. We males have been keeping stuff to ourselves, and
exactly.
We don't go out and share what's going on in our household. And
mm-hmm.
I'm finding that that's becoming problematic.
Yeah, exactly. And males do that. They don't talk a lot. Women share. Males don't share.
That's right.
So, but yeah, we'll do a session on that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Have a good evening.
All right. Same to you. Bye.